is what we are all trying to do right now during these very difficult times. Dr. Kevin Most is the Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern University's Central DuPage Hospital, and is our go-to expert of all things medical in a general sense, but certainly during this coronavirus pandemic. Kevin, good morning, and thank you again for joining us.
Good morning, Dean. How are you guys doing?
We are hanging in there, getting, one foot in front of the other on all of this, trying to be sensible, trying not to panic, and, trying to listen to all the good advice that's out there. That's all we can do right now, right?
That's absolutely it. It's the opportunity to do what you can do as an individual to slow this is probably the biggest message we can get out to everybody.
So let's start off with the latest medical news that's come out, and that was the disclosure, I don't remember if it was yesterday or Friday, that a vaccine had been, not a vaccine, but a test had been approved that would test for COVID-19 with about 5 minutes of wait time instead of several days or a week, as had been the case before. And that vaccine is being manufactured as quickly as possible and is going to be distributed as quickly as possible. What are your thoughts on something like that? Is it as effective since it's so fast? What kind of a game changer, if any, is it?
Yeah, Dean, this is one that in hindsight you look back and say, wow, we wish we had this 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. But we can't look back. We have to start looking forward. And we should all be very thankful for the Abbott team here in Chicago, in North Chicago, the Abbott team to come up with this test. And the reason I say thankful to them, right now, the testing capabilities across this country are strained. The commercial labs that can do this test are having turnaround times of 3 days, 5 days, 7 days. Even the local hospitals, North Shore, Northwestern, Rush, that have developed this test in-house, are being overwhelmed as well with the test. So if they can commercially get the kits out in volumes that they think they can, it is so important for a couple reasons. A five-minute turnaround makes us know if someone's in the emergency room, if they're COVID positive and we need to put them into a special room, or they have another viral or bacterial pneumonia and we can treat them differently. This will allow us to save the PPE issue that everyone is hearing about as far as shortages.
Yeah, the personal protective issue devices that people are for which there is such a big shortage right now. So is this as effective as something that would take a longer period of time to determine results?
Yeah, oh no, the testing, it's interesting when we look at the testing. Some of the testing now is developed essentially in-house. So the hospitals are doing it. Like at Northwestern, the test that we have, it takes about 4 to 5 hours just to set it up. So we're talking about a turnaround time of 24 hours, essentially. This one with the kit and the machine that's doing it instead of the high manual labor of a scientist doing it is allowing the turnaround time to be much faster. So it will be very important if they can get this to everybody's hands as quickly as possible.
When you say everybody's hands, do you mean everybody who comes to an emergency room with symptoms? Or would it also be wise just for everybody to get this test, whether you're showing symptoms or not, just to see where you are with this?
Well, that's the big issue right now, Dean, is how many can they provide and how many machines are out there. We're fortunate in the Northwestern system to have a bunch of these, it's called Abbott Allure machines that we do strep testing on and we do influenza testing on. So they have made up the kit for us to do that. Depending on how many we have, the importance we see right now are testing the first responders, testing those who work in nursing homes and assisted care living, and testing the caregivers right now because we don't want to spread it within the hospital from the caregivers to a vulnerable population that we're taking care of that may be negative but still in the hospital.
What's your take on availability of equipment, ventilators, masks, gloves, all that we're hearing, all of the governors and the president talking about, for which there is not enough available for healthcare workers right now? Are you seeing that similar shortage here in the Chicago area?
The Chicago area, we're doing okay, you know, and the part that we don't, and I'll give you just like a simple analogy as I can, and it may not be, it hopefully will make sense. You know, if the Cubs are going to play a baseball game and they know that they need 100 baseballs for that game, they're expecting the game to go 9 innings. If the game goes 27 innings, they're going to run out of baseballs. So that's where we're at right now. We don't know whether this is a 9-inning game or a 27-inning game. So we're using our equipment and our burn rate based on what our supplies are without knowing what the demand is going to be. So we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to have plenty of equipment for everybody to keep our caregivers safe. But we're also being realistic and let's make sure we conserve where appropriate and let's make sure we can reuse or re-sterilize where appropriate as well to stretch those supplies that we have.
We have been hearing that the peak of virus right now is New York. It seems like New Orleans seems to be in a peak. Where do you see Chicago falling into that? Because I'm hearing that we're next after, you know, where the peak cities are as of this moment.
Yeah, and this where I hate to say we keep our fingers crossed, but if you look at New York, they were a little late to the game. They have a highly populated area. When we talk about New York, we're talking about New York City, not the state of New York. Louisiana, unfortunately, you look at what happened during Mardi Gras and the crowds they had there. This was almost expected. If you look at Florida, they're starting to turn red as well with the number of cases. So in Chicago, did we start the social isolation early enough? Are we more of a spread out population besides the just downtown? Those are the unknowns. But we do predictive modeling based on cases and the new cases as it turns up. And we still look like we're a little bit away, not far from starting to really see some ramp up in our numbers.
Yeah, as we're seeing, you know, the numbers of people who are infected in the governor's press conferences every day. And deaths, including the, you know, not that any death is more horrible than another, but when you hear about an infant who dies of coronavirus, it's particularly heartbreaking. And in the state of Illinois, you know, it makes it even more difficult. Let me give you a couple of questions, and then if it's okay with you, we'll just open up the phone lines. People have tons of questions for you. 312-981-7200. The 847 area code, Kev, says, why is using UV light not being discussed as a way to sanitize things?
Oh, it absolutely is being discussed. UV light as well as hydrogen peroxide are probably the two biggest ones that we're looking at right now. So it is being used, or it is being studied. The biggest thing with any of the re-sterilization is we have to make sure that we don't do more harm to the mask to degrade it, so that although we're thinking that we killed all the bugs in it, but we've degraded the equipment so that it's not as functional. When we look at these masks, they're not just a piece of paper. They're essentially a bunch of rubber, we'll say, sticks that are kind of molded together. The virus can pass through those, but you just hope that it blocks it. The reason they're called N95 masks is because it blocks 95% of what we're concerned about. Doesn't block 100. So we don't want to break that N95 mask and make it into an N50 mask and make people think that they have that protection.
Yeah, it's like an air filter on a furnace, isn't it? I mean, air is going to go through, but much of which will be filtered out by whatever is between the outside and the inside.
That's exactly it, Dean. You're spot on there.
Yeah. Someone is asking if there are carriers of the virus that feel fine and have no symptoms when they lift the stay at home. At home restrictions and everyone goes out, won't we just be starting all over again?
Well, that is the big concern. The big concern is will we have a second wave of this because we have a lot of asymptomatic people right now. And that's why we're starting to look at the timing of this. You know, people are saying, well, is 14 days enough? Is 15 days enough? The biggest concern right now is controlling this as much as possible so that if you were asymptomatic, would it be gone, you know, at the time we're lifting some of these restrictions? That's why lifting the restrictions now does not make a lot of sense to people, because we would still now go back with asymptomatic people that have the virus but don't have symptoms and start spreading it again.
Someone is asking, I am type 2 diabetic. Am I considered to be high risk for coronavirus?
Absolutely. Type 1 diabetics as well as type 2 diabetics, your immune system is not as strong. That's why we make sure that as you age, we want to make sure you have your pneumovax, your shingles vaccines. We know that the diabetic patients, their immune system is not as responsive. So definitely at concern, and you should be considered vulnerable and to really try to protect yourself as much as you can.
Let's go to the phone lines, 312-981-7200. Sarah's in Barrington, and you are on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Good morning. I have a question. My parents are snowbirds in Florida. They're supposed to come home at the end of March. We're trying to figure out a safe way to get them home. They drove.
Sarah, probably the safest way is to drive, to be honest with you. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, if you want to limit what they can do. Now, the bad thing is, you know, young people can do that 24, 26-hour drive without stopping at a hotel. That would be one of the biggest concerns is on their travel, if they were going to stop, would they be able to find hotels that are still open for this? And the reason
the other thing is my father has a heart condition.
Yeah. So the reason I say I'm concerned is that air travel right now, if you can find a plane, you probably would be pretty safe because you may be only one of the few that are on the plane. However, they would be able to completely control their environment in the car, where they wouldn't be able to control their environment on a train or on a plane.
Yeah, but also if they decide to do road trip, as well as you mentioned, Kevin, will they find a hotel that's open, number one? And how sanitized? They're going to have to come in contact with people to check into the hotel. They're going to have to be around people probably at the hotel.
Stopping at gas stations, same bathrooms.
Yeah. Same thing with gas stations. Same thing with getting food.
Absolutely.
Along the way is
that there's an increase in Florida, if possible, are they better off staying where they are?
Absolutely. If they can shelter in place and protect themselves in the environment that they're in, that's much better than taking any kind of travel where they're going to expose themselves to many others. You know, if they can stay in their home where they're at and have, you know, groceries delivered and they can control their environment, much better than getting out and have potential exposures right now, especially through the South where we haven't seen big numbers except Florida. You know, take the opportunity to keep them in the environment that you know that they're safe in and just make sure they have the supplies needed until this slows or starts to drop off dramatically.
Yeah, really. I mean, with any of us, the question that you have to ask is what kind of contact am I going to have with others and things that others may have touched, right? I mean, that's the general rule.
It is. It's, you know, the young say, oh, I don't care if I get it, I'm going to be over this in no time. But the young have to remember that even if they have minor symptoms, they're exposing themselves to others who may expose themselves to a vulnerable. You have to look 2-3 down the road as far as what the impact of this is for those who have it and really just are taking it in a nonchalant fashion.
Yeah, Sarah, good luck with that, and thank you very much for the call. A couple of people, Kev, have texted in on the phone line saying that their parents are in nursing homes and that they're not able to see them, and they feel the frustration. I can 100% relate to that. But that's the safest thing for everybody, for your parents who are in nursing homes, and for you, so the virus does not get spread to those who are most at risk for it.
Absolutely. It's probably one of the things you're seeing at every single hospital now. Almost every hospital is down to zero visitors, with the exception of end of life or, in some cases, labor and delivery and newborns. We're strongly recommending people, I mean, I don't want to push any product, but we're strongly recommending people download the Zoom app so that you can have a video monitor and a video chat.
Right.
With your loved one in the hospital, and you can check on them. I don't know. I'm sure other hospitals are doing it, but we have iPads for this available for patients. so that they can video chat with their family. So that social isolation that they're having is not a fun time when they're the sickest they've been in their life. And so that moral support decreases some anxiety, and sometimes just seeing that smiling face really helps. So we're trying to make it as easy as we can for people to still communicate with their family.
Yeah, that's what I did with, and as a lot of people are doing. I had a visit with my mom through the window, so I wasn't bringing anything to her. That her environment wasn't bringing anything to me. We talked on the phone while looking through the window. And, you know, I imagine that's what she thought all of her life. This is what it's going to be like when Dean's in prison and I have to talk to him. Here's Susan in Palatine. You're on WGN.
I don't think we're going to find you in prison. My question has to do with handmade face masks. I'm getting a lot of emails asking. I am a sewer, and I'm being asked to sew face masks, and because there's a shortage out there at the hospitals and the nursing homes and so on. And I wonder how effective these handmade cotton masks are, and if they're even going to be used.
Yeah. So some hospitals, matter of fact, University of Chicago is actually going to be the mask similar to what you're talking about. So as far as protection, it's interesting that they really don't protect me if I'm going to be taking care of a COVID patient. However, they do protect anyone else. In other words, if I have a cough or if I have any congestion, it's going to stop that from coming out of my mouth or nose. The other interesting thing is we know that people, when they touch things and then touch their face, will actually, you know, increase the spread of this. So just having a mask on will often decrease the amount of times you are going to touch your face. So we appreciate everything that everyone is doing in the community. People have really stepped up. And I can tell you right now, we're making sure that the first responders and actually those also in nursing homes and that work in nursing homes are getting these masks as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people on Facebook also, as you are doing, Susan, sewing and making masks for people. You know, I guess something is better than nothing, but, you know, not the complete protection that healthcare providers should have.
Yeah. I would check.
It's such a shame that they don't have what they really need.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Susan, check with any local nursing homes around you. You know, they are probably in more dire need of supplies than some hospitals because they really, one, they don't have the buying power. In other words, we probably have 15 people trying to procure supplies. Some of these nursing homes are very lean and may not have that capability. So they may want your masks, and they may really appreciate them.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Susan. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Susan. Okay, somebody is texting in. Kev, are humidifiers a good idea to use right now?
You know, probably people say they're either good to use or bad to use. We haven't really done the science on it. It humidifies the air, which at this time of the year with the rain we've had, do we really need it? Probably not. It's a matter of whether it's recirculating anything. So really, in a personal home, it's not going to make a huge difference. We look at it more from a health system point of view of where do we want to keep the humidity rates for the entire hospital. But it's not going to spread anything. It does, you know, in many cases have filters on it, but not a filter that's going to make any difference. The chance of this being more airborne, in other words, just floating around the air, is very low. This is more of a droplet where it sinks and lands on a countertop or a chair versus something that's airborne and we could filter out with just using HEPA filters and things along those lines.
Yeah, what's your feeling about packaging from the store? I mean, bringing things that you get from the grocery store home and cleaning the packaging before you store it, that, you know, somebody may have touched the packaging, somebody may have coughed on something at the store. Has there been too much talk about that?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if your anxiety level is at a point like that, then do what you think is going to do to make you completely safe. Wear gloves, take it out of the packaging, throw away the packaging and put it into your own on your own plates if you're going to do food or, you know, groceries. You know, if we're concerned about, did the person who delivered these cough on them just before? If you're super anxious about this, leave them in your garage 24 hours and the virus won't be on it. So for the most part, I would not be overly concerned. We know it lives on surfaces, but we don't, you know, the timing of it has been varying from a couple hours to a couple days. So, but if it'll decrease your anxiety, it's certainly one thing that you can do.
Yeah. What about produce in the store? You know, you go to the store and you see people picking through the oranges, you know, trying to find the best orange. You see them picking through lettuce and, you know, and most of them don't have gloves on. Zero precautions. Is a simple rinse in the sink good enough for all of that? Or should you be taking soap and water to the oranges when you get them home or, you know, to non-porous vegetables? What kind of precautions do you need to take there?
Yeah, a lot of people are really taking that extra precaution, and you really, as long as your hands are clean, you wash the vegetables, you wash whatever it is that you're going to use, and then as long as you're not eating that outer surface. So then we say, what about apples and things like that? Those are the ones where, okay, if you're going to let them sit for a little while, sit for a day, the virus is not going to be sustainable on an apple. So the others, oranges and bananas and things where we're taking out that outer covering, should not be an issue as well. So wash your vegetables. And a lot of people, I can tell you, are still want to get those vegetables. Go into the grocery store. Now you're going to see one of the areas that's pretty hard hit is the frozen vegetable portion. So a lot of people are staying away from fresh. And if you do, that's okay. Go to frozen. But just make sure, too, that you're taking a vitamin, because really we want to make sure our immune systems are as strong as possible.
Yeah, here is Bill in Chicago. You are on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Yeah, I last night watched a program on C-SPAN about the 57-58 Asian pandemic flu season, where over a million people got it and over 100,000 passed away. And what's the difference between now and then? Because we didn't have all this modern stuff in 57, all this internet, and it was a special news sponsored by Westinghouse. It was on C-SPAN last night, and they had Dr. Bernie on there, and it started in Hong Kong, and of course they tracked all the way around the world, and they were working on a vaccine, and they said it should be their vaccine. This was like a June or a July program, I think, the year date it was on, and they said that they're working on a vaccine, and the vaccine should be ready by probably the end of that 57 year, and advise everyone to make sure they get the vaccine.
So let me.
If it was that many people, we didn't close the country down then, and we're over a million. They had over a million people get it, and 100-some thousand died.
So what's the difference, Kevin, between that and what we're dealing with now?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. You know, if you look at even the deaths for influenza every year, we have, you know, even in the United States, we have 30,000 deaths from influenza. But we're still going to have those number of deaths. And now we have this increased number because of the virus that we have that the mortality rate is so high in the vulnerable populations. If you look historically and said, gosh, what did we do in 1918? What did we do in 1957? And what are we doing now? Had we had the capabilities of doing what we can do now back then, you would have seen different things that would have happened. The vaccine portion of it that everyone wants to know about, we are still a ways away from a vaccine. Certainly there are trials going on right now for a vaccine, but there's many different steps to make sure that the vaccine is, one, effective, and two, doesn't harm somebody. So we're still in the early stages of the vaccine. In 57, we would have been making vaccines in eggs and would have taken a long time to make enough. Now we have cell-based production where we will be able to, if we get a vaccine, ramp up and make a lot of vaccination possible for those who need it.
Kevin, what's your feeling about quarantining? I know that you're a proponent, as we all are, of social distancing, but there's been so much talk of quarantining areas, keeping people off the lakefront this week, keeping groups of people away from each other. I mean, if there was a giant order, a nationwide order of staying at home or quarantine, would that be the most effective way to stop things in its tracks?
Yeah, you know, Dean, you think that everyone is fairly smart, and you think that We've seen what has happened around the world, and you think we say, boy, let's make sure we social distance, because if you are 10 feet away from me and you cough, the chance of me getting it is very low. We know how far particles will go. Unfortunately, we're not showing that we're very smart. Look at the lakefront. Look at what happened in Washington, D.C. with the cherry festival, you know, the cherry blossoms. You know, we all know what we're supposed to do, and yet we are not doing it. So it's, if it comes to, hey, you know what, we're going to have to do a quarantine like China did, boy, that's sad, because we've all been given the opportunity to control this as much as possible. And unfortunately, we're not following the simple rules that we should all be doing.
Yeah. Kevin, I always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your expertise. I hope you're staying happy and healthy. And we look forward to talking to you again soon, hopefully under happier conditions.
You got it, Dean. I'm sure we'll touch base next week.